business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business Show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. Thank you, Craig. It's exactly 10 minutes past 12. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today, as usual, we have a very special guest lined up. But before we go to Jody Slutsky, who is a part of the Westbrook's distribution team, and to really discuss the importance of offshore investments, I just need to frame where we're standing today as a nation. Yesterday morning, I had the privilege of driving down to our vineyard in the Negev, and Yaakov Shweki accompanied me on the way down. I was in a great mood. I was going to meet a group of 30 mothers that were coming from Yeshiva College in South Africa. And, you know, there'd been a lot of build-up to this meeting. My son and daughter-in-law were meeting me there. And we really had a great morning and early afternoon planned with a special group of ladies. And so it happened. It was a great time that we had together. We worked in the vineyard. We shared information about sheep farming and the history of it in the area. We had a great lunch. But the news of the pigua came through halfway through the event. The terrorist attack in Jerusalem came through halfway through the event. And of course, everybody's phones blew up with their families wondering where they are, how they are. And we were safely away. But the event sent cold shivers down my spine, because it wasn't too long ago in a place very close to where that event happened that another family was attacked by a car ramming. Two young brothers were killed. The father ended up in hospital for an extended period of time with damaged legs. And I went with my youngest son, Hanan, to the house of mourning, to the Shiva house. And on the table was a picture of these two young boys. And apparently, when Bibi Netanyahu came to visit, he asked for the picture. And he sent it to New York to United Nations ambassador, Israel's ambassador. And that was the picture that they showed. The event took place so close to where that one happened. Again, our nation is in mourning. I drove back. I called my office and said, guys, please just hold all calls. I just need the drive back to decompress from the news that we've had. And only to get back home and to find that we've lost four young souls in Gaza, a war that we don't want, a war where we don't want to be involved. We just want to get the hell out of there already. But we're not doing that without Hamas never having the power to hurt us again, and without every single hostage coming home. Those are with us in body and spirit, and those who aren't. And until that day, we will continue to pay the price. And we as a nation will continue to stand behind our government and our military in order to bring that peace around. And I just wanted to frame the beginning of my session with that and to say that I'll discuss it in the later part. But patiently on the line is Jody. Jody, thank you. I saw your emotion over there. Just a rough day yesterday.
Very difficult day.
But as we say, life needs to go on. And Chai FM and us as a family, as the K family, have always said that the heart doesn't have space for anger and frustration and for love and reconciliation. And we just need to focus on the one, not be naive or stupid, but life does go on. Tomorrow is going to happen, whether you are going to be there or not, in spirit. And one just needs to harness the energy of everything around. And Jody, that's what you guys have done. You've seen the South African rand is weak. You've seen that economy is not doing well. You've also seen that the UK economy is scraping its knees from time to time on the asphalt. And you've come up with a product that really allows South African investors to take advantage of what's out there without jumping through hoops of fire, without being a multimillionaire, without having a family company behind you to run maintenance of your investments. Talk us through the process, please.
Sure. So, Avi, thanks for having us today on your show. So maybe just to take a quick step back and just explain to your listeners a little bit about Westbrook. Westbrook was founded in 2004 by Martin Sachs. He's a prominent private equity businessman in South Africa. He still remains the majority shareholder today, alongside Capricorn, which has been renamed to Opus 18. And they essentially serve as a family office for the Eindhoven family. With over 20 years of experience, Westbrook Alternative Asset Management provides access to the global world of alternative assets or private market investing. We can delve deeper into what that means later on. We just have around $1 billion of assets under management currently. And we focus in three key geographies, being the UK, the USA, and South Africa, with in-country investment teams. So it's not like I'm sitting in Johannesburg today trying to understand the UK or the US market. I think that's really important when you're looking at an investment house. And we focus on four key pillars within the alternative asset space, which is private debt, so that's senior loans to borrowers in the market, to hybrid capital, which is more of your mezzanine style loans, all the way into equity investments into real estate and private equity. So just to quickly frame, that's what Westbrook does, and we provide access to these assets to South African connected capital. So whether you're sitting in South Africa or you're sitting in Israel or the UK, we provide that type of access, which is typically not accessible to a retail base.
Now, Jody, you said something and you quickly qualified it. I just want to expand on that a little bit for our listeners. South Africans tend to be myopic. They tend to get tunnel vision and think that South Africa is almost the center of the world when it comes to politics, business, economies, mining. And yet, those of us who've been blessed to be able to travel around the world, South Africa always conjures up a smile on someone's face as a country that's gone through change and transition, country that boxes above its weight in so many of the different areas, but a country that economically, if it fell off the bottom of Africa, I'm not quite sure the ripple effects would even be felt around the world in any way. So as much as South Africa is the most phenomenal place, it is so important to have people on the street, so to speak, in countries that you invest. Something that I get asked by Israelis all the time: how can you be South African? How can you have a South African passport? Isn't it dangerous as a Jew? And I
Get
said,
asked the same.
you know, yeah, the first few times I went back, I was a little bit anxious for a myriad of reasons. But now I really look forward to going back. I was driving down Rivonia Road one day and my wife called me and she said to me, "What's it like to be back?" And I was quiet and she said to me, "It's familiar, isn't it?" And I said, "That's exactly what it is." I remember saying to my father-in-law once, who was visiting from the UK when we were in South Africa, "Do you want a GPS?" And he said to me, that was a couple of years ago, he said, "The city that you rode your bicycle around as a child, you'll never need a GPS for." So, Jody, what I'm saying is that by having teams on the ground who can feel the heartbeat of what's going on there, the feeling, the idea, when to invest, when not to invest is so important. If you look back to COVID, when when it first started, the market in South Africa really crashed. It really went down. Not that it crashed, but there was just a lot of value taken out of it. And one could have thought that, oh, the world's coming to an end. And it took people like Adrian Gore and his ilk to turn around and say, "Guys, this is the biggest freeze that the world's ever had. Just calm down. The value is there." And that's why it's so important. Jody, I'm stealing your show. Let's take a quick break and run to the shops quickly. And when we come back, I will talk less. Thanks so much.
100%.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 FM. Jody Ostrowski, who is a member of the Westbrook distribution team. Thank you so much for staying on the line. Jody, let's go back to the advantages as Craig. Thank you. I will do a live read in a moment. Jody, let's go back to the advantages of South Africans investing offshore. So we almost just painted a bleak picture that South Africa is not the be-all and end-all when it comes to investment. But yes, yet we can harness the energy of the rest of the world. How do you help clients to do that?
Sure. So I think, familiarity, just to go back to your point before the break, familiarity is key. And I think that's why we focused on familiar type, geographies being the UK and the USA. But how we do this essentially is investing in alternatives. So South Africa is a very small part of the global world, less than 1%. And therefore, access to opportunities, access to, bigger listed companies, tech giants, AI, it's quite difficult, right? But with alternatives, you're investing in a subset of assets that's different from traditional equities that majority of South Africans can obtain via the JSE, CTSC, and other platforms. Alternatives are different. They act as a diversifier, and they're less volatile or less subjective to political instability or the noise in the market. You don't see that volatility, and that's why it's a nice diversifier for a portfolio. We see a lot of South Africans externalizing cash. Excon approvals have become a little bit easier to obtain. As an individual, you can take 1 million. If you get IFA approval, you can take more than 10 million out, so 11 million a year. The problem is, what are South Africans doing once they've externalized that cash? We've come up with a solution at Westbrook, and specifically talking to our UK geography, our flagship fund is called Yield Plus. If you put this money that you've externalized into a prime saver account or a fixed deposit account, you're typically after tax generating a 1.8% return. With a Yield Plus or a private debt style fund, you can develop an asymmetric return, which means a higher return without taking a higher commensurate risk for that return. How is this possible? We serve a subset of the market that banks typically don't serve. Not because they won't, but because during the global financial crisis, banks retreated, they became more regulated, less flexible, and you have to fit a specific mandate in order to get funding from them. We fill that gap of funding. Borrowers require flexible, timely capital solutions, and that's where we play. And we're able to provide our investors the benefit for that. And that's how we generate a higher return relative to what you would earn in traditional type investments.
So, Dodie, I've just got a message that's come through to say it all sounds good and well, but if I buy the index in the States, for example, I can do better than that. Why would one look at an investment where I'm still getting single-digit returns?
So I think when you look at an investment portfolio, you need to take into account you've got buckets for different types of capital. You have your tracker funds, you have your listed equities, you have your listed bonds, fixed income, even cash. There's a place for all of it. We're saying alternatives should be a subset of a portfolio, right? They should make up a portion of your portfolio that adds to a diversifier. So when your listed equities, well, when Trump announces 30% tariffs and your listed equity market does this and your tracker funds reduce, you need something that acts as a shock absorber in your portfolio that is uncorrelated to that noise. And that's why we believe this is an addition to a portfolio. I'm not saying take your entire portfolio and put it into an alternatives. There are alternatives also that have are more capital preservation, like senior secured debt funds, like our Yield Plus fund. And then there's more higher returns or funds that generate higher returns, like our private equity fund, which is 20% plus in a return. So it depends your risk appetite, what you're looking to generate, what you're looking to achieve. Is it capital growth? Is it yield? There's a place across that entire alternative space for different returns depending on your risk appetite. But it should always be a portion of your portfolio, not your entire portfolio.
Jody, you hit the nail on the head there as you're talking about Trump and tariffs and dips in the market. There's a big difference between tolerance and appetite. I often say to people, our eyes are bigger than our stomach, so to speak, but sometimes our eyes are bigger than our minds. We look at the pizza, we want the whole thing, but after two or three slices, we just can't handle the richness of it. And that's an example one would give for wanting to get into those high yielding funds. But the moment there's a bit of a jerk in the market or there's a knee-jerk reaction, people freak out and then they sell at the bottom. Whereas this is a way of getting really solid returns, even on a South African alpha basis, without risk, getting your return and it's offshore and it's not denominated in rands. Am I correct in saying that The transaction actually happens directly offshore, and the investor has a choice whether to repatriate or not.
Yes, correct. So our specific fund, Yield Plus, only takes hard currency. So you've either had to externalize capital, or you can do it via an asset swap through a platform, or your financial advisor could assist you with that. So it only accepts hard currency. One thing I would caution when you're looking at offshore funds, to make sure where the underlying assets are sitting. For us, all our assets are sitting in the UK. It's a GBP domiciled fund. Some of the other players in the market, their fund might be domiciled in GBP or USD, but sometimes the assets are sitting in the Middle East or, you know, other parts of the world. So I caution you always to look, where is the underlying sitting? What is the underlying risk? What is it exposed to? I think that's really, really important when you're looking at a specific fund opportunity.
You know, Jody, once again, you saw on the money there, in a sense that I was sitting at a wedding the other day, and there was youngsters sitting around me, and I was just transported into a later 20, early 30-year-old's way of looking at investments in the world, and on the phones and tracking different indices and looking at different returns. And all of a sudden, you know, sitting here in Israel rather than sitting in South Africa, and seeing the exposure that people have was absolutely phenomenal. But the first thing that struck me is how savvy these youngsters were. Yes, they were looking at the returns. They were looking at the longer term returns, but they were looking at the underlying assets, getting an understanding, where is this return coming from? With a window to what's happening in the Middle East, does Yemen affect Saudi Arabia? Does Saudi Arabia even care what happens in Yemen from a business point of view? What's happening in Europe? The fact that there's so much political noise, but what's about growth in the country? What's about debt in the country? And something in the UK that we're fascinated about is, what's the asset to debt ratio on private homes? They almost use that as a barometer. And I looked at this and I was just amazed at, this is like MBA level sort of stuff that people sweat to get through, and here it's at the touch of their fingers, but they've got a deep understanding of how this all works, which is really phenomenal as to where the world's going. A question that's come through, which I suppose goes straight to the heart of the issue, is if people have to go to private companies for debt, why does that make it safe? Shouldn't it be more risky if they can't get it on the open market?
So typically, like I mentioned, banks have retreated. If you don't fit a certain mandate or a certain box, they typically won't lend to you. Either it's too small for them. So we play in the space within our Yield Plus fund, we provide loans of 10 to 20 million pounds, whereas a bank would only probably get out of bed for 50 and above. So we play in smaller quantums, typically shorter term in nature, banks like longer term. Let's look at an example. If you want to buy a property in the UK, let's say you find the property, you put down a bid, you're the preferred bidder. They ask you to put down a 10 million pound deposit. You go to the bank. The bank will say, come back to me when you need the 50 million pounds to acquire the property, and you need a 32-year mortgage bond. That's where we play. Not that the banks won't, but it's either too small, it's going to take them too long to do the due diligence, so they're not going to get back to you in a timely manner. And maybe there's some form of complexity. You don't have that property, but you have another form of property in your portfolio that we can look to take security over. So that's really, it's not that banks won't play, it's just that banks don't typically service that market. The risk is the same. We're providing loans at an average loan to value of 56%, right? That means for every 100 rand of value in the property, we're providing 56% of that at a debt level. That means the property would need to decrease by 40% before your loan value is impacted. What is the likelihood that within a 12 to 36 month, which is the maximum term of the loans in the fund, what is the likelihood that that property would decrease by that 40%? It's very unlikely in a short-term basis. We're always typically financed out by one of the larger banks within the UK, and that's really how we exit. Also key in terms of risk is diversification. Yield Plus, the fund I'm referencing, has 40 underlying loans within the portfolio across different sectors in the real estate. commercial, industrial, residential. So although diversified in number, it's diversified in borrower and sector. So I think those all add to, increasing that risk safeguarding in terms of the fund.
A very interesting question has come through. Someone wants to know, is your loan registered against the title deed?
Yes, so we take security. Everything is senior secured. We have security over the property. That's why we say the fund is capital preservation, or should we say private debt is capital preservation focused, because you have tangible security either over a property, if it's a real estate fund, if it's, on a more receivables balance, you could take security over, but it's always tangible and cash flow generative. Therefore, if there was an event of default or something were to go wrong, you would then obtain rights to that property. You would then market it and sell it. So your risk is not capital loss. Your risk is potentially duration, that it may take longer to realize value than initially anticipated. But that's why I go back to my initial point of diversification. If there are 40 loans, what is the likelihood that all 40 default? Very, very unlikely. But in that event, it's not the risk that you would lose your capital, it's the risk that it would take longer to realize.
And longer to realize means more interest earned. So
Exactly.
it does work that way. Just the last question before I let you go. Simon wants to know, he says, I know you're domiciled in South Africa, the UK, and the USA. If I wanted to borrow money as a South African against a property, against an investment property, for example, let's say Cyprus, would you be open to that?
So currently, our strategy in terms of providing loans in the UK, we're only focused in the UK. So we don't have teams or boots on the ground in Cyprus or other parts of Europe. So we will not look to provide access to loans in those specific geographies. From a South African perspective, if the property is here, we do have local funds as well where we're able to provide access to finance. But for now, it's purely UK, US, and South African based. That's where we have boots on the ground, and that's where we're comfortable.
Jodie, to be honest, there's a flood of messages coming in, all looking for gap financing and shortfalls on bonds and things like
There's
that.
a definite gap in the market.
So what I'm going to do, if you don't mind, I'm actually going to be in touch with you privately and just discuss a few things with you, and then we'll set up another interview and we will go through that particular sector, because I actually just want to prepare a little bit to know what your parameters are prior to launching in. And all of a sudden now we're in the microloan business, which is
Yeah,
nowhere
no,
near.
let's not get there. But I'm happy with that approach.
Great. Jodie, thank you so much. And thank you to Westbrook for always being available and really just giving us interesting content to share with our listeners, and wishing you guys all the best.
Thanks for having us, Avi. Have a good afternoon,
Good.
everyone.
Good. Thank you. That was Jodie
Bye.
from Westbrook. And please go have a look at the website. It's Westbrook Alternative Asset Management. Really great website. Everything's there. Ask for Jodie herself and she can speak you through it. So if you are in the market for that type of financing, then that is definitely the place for you to be. I just want to apologize to Jodie. I would have loved to have kept her on a little bit longer, but I just want to spend the time to unpack briefly what happened yesterday. You've all heard the news. You've all followed it. You've all seen what's going on. I want to take you maybe behind the scenes. Not that I'm an investigative journalist, not that I myself have been on the scene or have yet been to visit the families or have gone to the funerals. But an event like this is very personal for me. I spent Sunday afternoon, I left home at about 3 o'clock, and I went from my home to my lot where the terrorist attack happened yesterday just to do an errand. And from there, I went to Har HaMenuchot, the cemetery where my son Eli is buried, and I spent some time there. And from there, I went to the old city. And I walked down the road that Eddie walked on his way to the Kotel on that fateful day. And I stopped at the point where Eddie was killed. And I went to the Kotel, the Western Wall. I prayed the afternoon prayer. And I retraced my steps. I came back. I picked up my younger son, who had just finished a shift in the King David Hotel. And we came home together. And the reason I did it was that the fundraiser for the Eddie K Vineyard had just started. And I thought it was appropriate that I just let Eddie know that this is what we're doing in his memory. And as I said earlier, when I drove down to the vineyard yesterday, I was just so buoyed. I was so full of energy. Our fundraiser had started. I was going to meet South Africans, not just any South Africans, mothers from Yeshiva College, a school that's very close to our family's heart, a school that really was there for us when we needed a place for our son to go to school. It's a happy, warm environment where it is infused with Torah learning. It is infused with Ahavat Yisrael, love for one's fellow Jew, and one love for one's fellow creatures. And I just got there really happy. And the group arrived, and I felt like I was backing Glen Hazel. Just the accents and the attitudes and everybody that I knew and people. One of my colleagues was there. I didn't even know she was coming. It was just absolutely wonderful. And then, you know, we spent time in the vineyard together, and the ladies were pruning and they were weeding, and then they were shoveling sheep, you know what, out of the pens, and everybody just felt like they were contributing. And then the news came through. My wife called me to say there had been a terrorist attack in Jerusalem. And she said, maybe don't tell the ladies, because why spoil something from them? They're not there. But I went to the tour guide right away. He said, they know, I know, the families have all been in touch. And our day continued. And I want to highlight one event that happened over there that to me crystallized why these ladies came to Israel and why Israel is the center of our life. One of the ladies was working in a vegetable patch with a whole lot of youngsters who have just dedicated a year to working in agriculture on that particular farm. Some of them after the army, some of them before the army, some of them in place of the army. And they gave her a watermelon and said, yeah, take this. And she brought it and said, guys, I've got fresh watermelon. And the tour guide turned around and said, we can't just eat fruit and vegetables in Israel. We need to separate the tithes. We need to do a special spiritual act that remembers the time of the temple when a tithe was given to the priest and to the Levite, was taken to Jerusalem, either physically or symbolically, where the poor were given. And we sat with this group of ladies and we said the special blessing, and they were all part of it, something that we don't do if we live out of the Holy Land. And yet they were all so keen to partake in the special ritual. And that shows us that whatever comes from our land is holy. Whatever is within this board, these borders are holy. And Jews just want to live in peace. When an event happens, like happened yesterday, where there's this cunningness to get onto a bus full of hope and helpless people, mow them down with machine gun fire, is something that the human brain can't conceptualize. The families that have been destroyed, the trauma that has been spread. And yet we stand there and we make a blessing on a little piece of fruit or vegetables from the Holy Land to remind us that we will live here and we will be here because this is our inheritance and it is holy. And anybody is welcome to join us and be with us, so long as you live with peace. And then to come home and to see the four young lives that were taken in Gaza just adds to the pain and the anguish. And the first thing that we do as a family is you look through the names. Do you recognize anybody? Then where they're from. And when you read out the name Modi'in, which is a city that we live in, your heart breaks. Is it the neighbor next door? Is it the person who hooted at you in the parking lot yesterday? Is it someone that you've never seen before? Doesn't make a difference. It's your city. Yes, there's 120,000 of us here, but we all brothers and sisters together. I have this platform, and all I want to say is thank you to all peace-loving people around the world, Jews and Gentile alike, who see beyond the noise, who see beyond the pollution, who see beyond the lies, and understand that life in Israel goes on. And all that we really want is to live in peace and harmony with everybody around us. But that cannot happen when your enemy wants you destroyed. And that's the only negotiating point that they are sticking to. It's all or nothing. We are guilty of the same. Because Israel is ours. From the river to the sea. From the Golan Heights all the way down to Eilat. And it's a country of peace, a country of prosperity, a country of innovation, a country where everybody can live together. And it's my prayer and my hope that before the Jewish New Year, all the hostages will be returned, the war in Gaza will come to an end, somehow people will get their lives back together, and we can stop living with this absolute panic and this pressure of our families being mutilated, killed in the streets by just catching a bus. Craig, as always, thank you for pushing the buttons. Everybody else, thank you so much for listening. Wishing you a great week, a safe week, a prosperous week. Speak to you shortly.